Oh, who's chatting?
I guess I should. Cool. Maybe.
Yeah.
Alright.
You're talking about the most things.
Alright, so hello and welcome to Arcadian Rhythms episode 6, To Catch a Predator edition. my name is AJ. I write for Badger Commander and also for Arcadian Rhythms. Also joining me is...
This is Sean. I do Arcadian Rhythms and a bunch of other shit. It's super exciting. My intro is always crappy, so sorry about that. We have a special guest this evening, and he is...
I'm Harry Potter.
the famous Harry Potter, who you may remember from There Is No Potter in Team.
Teamworking Potter.
Yeah, the most famous TK in the world.
Yeah. Co-op friendly Potter.
That's not how I would describe it ever. Well, anyway, it's not actually To Catch a Predator special. It's mainly we're going to be talking about XCOM, because that came out 2 weeks ago and we've had a chance to actually blitz it to high shit. And the reason we invited Potter is because actually he might have something to say about this. XCOM has a really long legacy. It started... When did it start? What? Like early 90s?
Jesus. Yeah, well, I mean, technically it started before that because... it was actually a follow-up to the Gollop brothers, who made Laser Squad many, many years ago, which I think may have been the late 80s. I never actually played that. But that was a sort of a tactical sort of turn-based game, and that was later followed by... in Europe, it was known as UFO Enemy Unknown, and in the Americas as XCOM UFO Defense. And that was about 91. And that, it was followed by a few others. There was Terror from the Deep in about 93, XCOM Apocalypse, 95, a couple of things that we don't really talk about.
Did they try and make an FPS out of it at one point?
They made a third-person shooter called XCOM Enforcer, and it was like the bowel cancer of video games.
Oh, nice.
They also made XCOM Interceptor, which was kind of a cross between, you know, sort of XCOM strategic stuff and a space sim. And I actually, you know, have a soft spot for that because I played it through when I was a teenager, and it was okay. It wasn't great, but it was okay. And there was also an XCOM play-by-email game, which, you know, it's easy to make fun of, but that actually has a bit of an interesting backstory because it was made by a bloke who, I can't remember which company he worked for, whoever it was that held the publishing rights at the time. This guy said, oh, how about we make this game? I've got these ideas for it, and he was poo-pooed. So he went ahead and made it in his spare time, and when it was finished and he'd sort of playtested it with some friends, he presented it to the company and they said, actually, that's pretty cool, and they did end up publishing it for a relatively small amount of money, and it featured in the XCOM collection that they released around the same time. So, you know, it's pretty cool. Yeah. It's like, you know, that, I mean, and that's the sort of love that the series inspires. You know, people make these games in their spare time and they end up getting published.
Awesome.
So that's pretty cool. About 2 years ago, they decided they're going to make a new XCOM game, and it was announced that it was going to be made by 2K Marin, who made the second Bioshock game. That was supposed to be an FPS with elements taken directly from XCOM. And it was kind of, from what I remember, it was the reaction that a lot of people gave was, what the fuck is this? And it almost feels like this XCOM game is, in some way, to placate all of the angry naysayers before the first-person... XCOM game, which I think could actually be quite good, but lots of other people disagree. And
well,
so
I'm a fan of the original series, like a massive fan. It was a really formative gaming experience for me, and I'm quite optimistic about. They just call it XCOM, don't they?
Yeah.
The new first person one. It's you know, sort of team based, tactical, cover based, first person shooter type thingy. But I liked what they teased in the early promotional material. This idea that you go into a mission, you don't know what's going on, you fight aliens as one does, you try and learn a bit more information about what's happening, and you eventually get in over your head, and then you retreat. And I really liked that idea because that is kind of true thematically to XCOM. Understanding that you know this is asymmetric warfare, that you have to back out at points and retreat. And I thought that the early promotional material represented that quite well. So even though it was a completely different genre, I thought that thematically it was true. I think that they may not actually deliver on that now. I think it's been sort of drawn back towards what is expected from that style of shooter. But I mean, you know, I'm reserving judgment.
Yeah. Oh well. I mean, it's interesting you use that idea of the. Well, okay. Apologies to everyone. There's fireworks going off.
Yeah, we actually pay for those to go off. So if any time you hear explosions, that's fireworks that we pay for.
Yeah,
so.
It's Arcadian Rhythm sponsored fireworks. But yeah. Getting back to what you were saying, actually, about the FPS that they put into, one of the things that I had to say about XCOM, which I'm really, really loving, is because I originally did actually play one of the XCOM games as a 15-year-old and was completely baffled by the entire thing. I just kept dying all the time. Everything got overrun. Never had enough funding to do anything. Was constantly stressed out. Had no idea what was going on. And it actually turned me off. I never actually managed to get more than about 2 or 3 hours into the original XCOM. Partly, one, because once I started figuring out what was going on, my PC just started crashing on me. It was an old Pentium 133 megahertz PC, and it struggled a lot with the way in which it had been built. But I like the fact that you said that, because I think what XCOM, the current game, gets right is... From what I'm gathering, actually, that those experiences I had of the original XCOM game was what you would expect to get during that, is bafflement, bewilderment, a lot of fear and trepidation, and this game has managed to encompass all of that without it being an absolute bastard to control. And it has very simple mechanics which introduces everything very, very clearly, and it works very simply, but at the same time, every time you make a decision, you feel like something is going to go horribly, horribly wrong, and I think that works really, really well in its favour, and I'm really enjoying that, because I'm just to give it an idea, like, they've changed a few things. Like, they've made the combat is very turn based, so you have a squad between 4 and 6 men that go down onto whatever challenge you're doing, and you have to move them from cover. Once you've moved all of your men or given them orders like Overwatch, which means that they'll look through any point of view to try and shoot anything that moves into that point of view, or use the health pack, whatever, your turn ends and then it's time for the aliens to move. That's not how the original game worked for me. I had actually a weird pseudo real time thing going on.
No, it was actually true turn based.
Was it?
It was, yeah.
I mean, XCOM Apocalypse, the third one, offered the choice of turn-based or real-time.
Okay, then I was playing XCOM Apocalypse.
Was it all, bright, garish neon colours?
Yeah, that's
XCOM
the one I played.
Apocalypse, yeah.
Okay, that's the one I played. But anyway, right, stand corrected on this one. I played XCOM Apocalypse, which terrified me the entire time. It was awful. Well...
It wasn't tile-based turn-based.
It was tile-based, yeah.
Was it really?
Yeah, it was.
Because I played it really briefly and it just seemed to be... with the option of turn-based, but I couldn't see any or feel any tiles.
I mean, there were tiles there. I don't know what to say. It was
okay.
I did actually start a new XCOM Apocalypse game last year and started playing that through again, because it's not the most fondly remembered of the series by most people, but it's probably my favourite, which is probably going to make a whole bunch of old school PC XCOM fans start chewing on their knuckles. The fact that I said that, but I really, really liked that game. It felt like my XCOM game, to a greater extent than the other titles.
So in the same way that I really, really love Castlevania 2 Simon's Quest, even though everyone says it's terrible, and that's my favourite Castlevania game.
I have not played that particular game.
Oh yeah, it's not viewed fondly, but I'd actually say that's probably my favourite Castlevania game, and people hate me for saying that. But moving back to XCOM, one of the things that I really liked in terms of, apparently, like, the original XCOMs, but not this XCOM, the XCOM I played originally, the way in which it works is that they move. Everything you do when you move your squad mate makes extremely, extremely difficult things occur later. To put it in a euphemism.
To put it in a metaphor, the rose falls.
Yeah.
I think I know what you mean. It's that every single decision has potentially enormous significance. I mean, the consequences to any movement, any decision that you make, can be huge, because you move a guy to, you know, a few feet away, and that's very cautious. You move a guy to a bit further away, it's a bit bolder. Either of those choices can work out really well or really poorly for you.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things about the new XCOM that is quite different to the original games is that all of the enemies that you're up against in any given tactical mission, they're not all autonomously moving around, seeking you, trying to, you know, like, knowing that they're out to try and kill your squad and win the mission themselves. They're kind of in clusters or groups, and they're only triggered when one of your men moves into range, or they follow a predefined path and they themselves move into line.
And
of sight.
I also heard another thing, that those clusters, they actually swap. There are actually predefined clusters points where they can be, but the where they are, they actually swap round on.
Yeah,
on
that
those
makes
clusters.
Sense. Yeah,
which is kind of interesting.
Now, with the exception of, like, the hostage missions.
The terror missions.
Oh, God, yeah, indeed, yeah, the terror
then
missions.
Then they're moving around killing all the...
Yeah, I mean, they're still moving in these small clusters, but they're not actually seeking out your team, they're just killing the civilians.
But even the ones you haven't, your squad haven't come across yet.
They're moving
active already.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Turn two, or their first turn.
Yeah, yeah, that's very true.
But, I mean... Yeah, exactly. The choices are very, very difficult, and I think it was the guys at the Penny Arcade said evoking but not invoking. And
with the original.
Yeah, yeah, very much so, in the sense that the XCOM we're now playing is by no means anything like the original XCOM, in the sense that they've changed tons and tons of it and made it far more accessible for most players. But it managed to very, very cleverly, and the guys at FireAxis who make
more sponsored fireworks.
Yes.
Thanks, FireAxis.
Appreciate it.
This is going to happen for every single episode. We're going to have some random sound that's going to basically cut out random shit.
I liked the episode where we had sirens, because I was like, yes, we are finally hitting the Iron Thumbs level.
Interrupt this shit. All right.
The next bar though is jet flyovers. We've not had that yet.
Oh man, we need jet flyovers. Yeah. We can do this. Totally can do this. Completely lost track. No, well, the idea of evoking versus invoking, like the mood of the new XCOM, is completely the same. I there are moments where I feel exactly the same as when I was 15 years old and go, I don't. What's going on? Hey, what? No, don't die, because if you die, everything's fucked. And they've managed to nail that perfectly. They managed to evoke the spirit of the original XCOM without making it exactly like the old XCOM. Mm. So, I mean, a case in point, I was playing with my team, and my team were consisting of a guy called M. Morneau, Omar Mustafa, who are known as Bullet Sponge, a guy called Dom Gara, I can't remember the rest of the team, but anyway, Dom Gara is this elite sniper. He's like absolute badass, can kill everything. He's got line of sight, so he can, you know, he can see stuff that his teammates can see. And Omar Mustafa is an idiot, barely able to hold up the machine gun that he's been given. And Mike Morneau is like the colonel. He was the longest running member of my entire team. Really, really good. He's a heavy guy, able to lay down suppressing fire, shoot twice, do a bunch of really cool shit. In one of those decisions, I decided to climb Omar Mustafa up onto a much higher position to actually get a better field of vision, so that Dom Gara, who's way back, can then shoot at stuff that Omar can see.
Oh yeah, this actually ties into one of the other things that they've added since the previous XCOMs, which is that every soldier, I mean, they start out as a rookie, they're all completely generic, but once they have ranked up, they'll be funneled into one class or another. So there's assault, they get a shotgun thrown in their hands, they get skills which lend themselves to fast movement, getting up close and personal. Sniper, stands to reason what that is. Heavy, you know, heavy weapons, machine guns, they get a rocket launcher to use.
They can't
aim
for shit, but
they can
aim
for
fire
shit.
A lot of bullets.
True.
Yeah.
And support, who, you know, they use smoke grenades and medikits.
Yeah.
So the thing that AJ is referring to there is... one of the sniper abilities is called Squad Sight, and that basically means that they can shoot at something that their teammates can see. which is a fucking useful skill.
It's the best skill.
Can they shoot from? They can't shoot from anywhere. Right?
They can shoot from anywhere as long as their line of sight is not.
Line of sight has to be.
But there's ways to exploit that, and I'm going to talk about that later.
Okay.
But anyway, so Omar Mustafa has moved up onto this van, and he unlocks like these three dudes, and they're all standing right next to each other. And the thing is, every time
he unlocks these three dudes, they're all like chained up there.
Yes, indeed. Well, okay. When I say unlock, what happens is every time you encounter a new alien, you get a cutscene which shows where they are, and then they're allowed to free roam move. Mm-hmm. And they get a free move before you're allowed to shoot at them. So he moves up to onto this van, and basically cues a cutscene, and these three guys, who are mutons, who are quite tough guys to be, instead of moving away and finding cover in separate places, they all take cover right next to each other. So there's three of them lined up perfectly, and I'm just like, oh, brilliant. Because Omar Mustafa has got a rocket launcher, he's basically another heavy, and he's got a rocket launcher, and I'm like, oh, this couldn't, because Omar Mustafa can't hit shit for shit. Like, he's got like a 50% chance of hitting anything with his machine gun, but with a rocket launcher he has a 90% chance of hitting these people, and it has blast radius. The rocket launcher has a blast radius, so I'm like, this is going to be great, because basically he's going to fire the rocket launcher and splash damage, he's going to completely obliterate them. So I pull out the rocket launcher, and in true perfect XCOM Omar Mustafa style, he fires the rocket, it goes backwards. He fires the rocket and it shoots out the back of his rocket launcher.
I think I saw that in the film Four Lions, and that's when they blew up Osama bin Laden.
Yeah. Rather than Osama bin Laden, he blows up Mike Morneau, who's standing right next to a van. The van then it detonates again, and Mike Morneau goes into critical condition. And I'm like, I've had Mike Morneau for 9 hours. I've taken ages painfully leveling him up to make him all he could be, and fucking Omar Mustafa has just fucking wiped him out. Fortunately, I had a guy called Jesus Saroy, who was conveniently a support medic and went over and resurrected Morneau.
Was that like a gameplay mechanic or presumably it was, like, you wouldn't fight. There wouldn't be a bug that you'd fire the...
No, he missed. He completely missed. Yeah. And then it randomly chooses where the rocket's going to.
Oh, wow.
And it randomly chooses backwards.
That is the most obscure statistical possibility. I mean, generally speaking...
90% chance of hitting as well.
It's like the most impossibly small chance. I mean, all I can imagine is that the guy had like a, you know, terrifying phobia of spiders, and he saw one on his foot, and he's like... You know, sort of flails around a bit and just drops the rocket launcher and it lands on the floor and shoots backwards.
It was the worst. Fortunately, Omar Mustafa was removed from his duty about 2 missions later by being mind-controlled and then shot in the face by Dom Gara.
Oh man, I never shot any of my own guys.
It got to the point where if my guy got possessed and I couldn't kill the guy who had him possessed within 2 moves, that guy was dead. I was like, no, I'm sorry, you're out.
Wow.
I've not had the experience of seeing how much damage they do.
Oh, they
it's presumably
do
the same.
They do the damage. Like
than the aliens. So.
Two of my teammates were killed during a mind possessed section by other two teammates, and I ended up having 3 guys left because they had to take him down. I finished the level, but that's mainly because the guys I had were elite.
That's dark, man. Yeah. That's dark.
Case in point, because there are many difficulties on XCOM, and one of the things I would definitely recommend is do not play without Iron Man on. No, I would seriously say Iron Man makes a massive amount of difference once they fix all the bugs in Xbox.
that's why I've not used it yet, because I mean, I've noticed some UI issues in terms of moving guys into cover. At the top of elevated positions, unless you spin the camera around to a different angle, it doesn't like that. A few friends, including actually Walker, another of the Arcadian Rhythms guys, he's also been playing it, and you know, and he's been playing Iron Man, and he's had soldiers lost not to stupidity but just to UI bugs.
Yeah, same.
And I don't dig that. Although I have to say that I played my first successful campaign. I played through on normal without Iron Man, but I did not save scum at any point. Except once when I wanted to, and then decided not to.
Define save scum.
The mission crashed. Save scum is just save reloading. You know, it's like you miss a shot. You know, no, that's a critical shot. Reload the save game.
Wait, that's what I do all the time.
Yeah, you're also the person.
Am I a save scum?
You're a save scum. Yeah.
Damn.
It's old school XCOM, actually. You know, they've brought that back.
So
you know, the contempt for save scummers. I save scummed my way through a lot of the early XCOM games because they were unforgiving. Utterly brutal.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't want to lose anyone, though. I don't want them to die.
But that's what actually makes the best moment. It's, I mean, a case in point, really early on, there's an alien base you have to assault. And I'd had this elite team. And it was Sean Green.
I've heard about that guy. He's pretty cool.
Sean Green. There was Dylan Ramirez.
Dylan Ramirez.
Yeah.
Is that the famous sexy ski instructor?
Yes. Ramirez. There was AJ Duter, and some other people. What happened was I got into, and it was heartbreaking because they were all colonels. They'd been absolutely badass. They're going on this alien assault mission. Walk over the crest of this spaceship and it spawns these chrysalids, and the chrysalids are these weird arachnid creatures, and they run really quickly. They can cover a lot of distance very 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 short amount of time. Any civilians or enemies they kill turn into zombies that attack you. If that zombie stays for a certain period of time, they explode and turn into more chrysalids. And but we go over this rise, and two chrysalids spawn, and I take a few shots, miss, and they run up, and they took out Dylan Ramirez, who was my first casualty.
Reload, man. You have to reload. Do it differently. And save.
But the thing is, I was playing in Iron Man, so the first thing that happens in Iron Man is it saves automatically as soon as anything happens. So Dylan Ramirez is dead. Very, very dead.
Until you hire a new guy and, oh, his name. Funnily enough, it's Dylan Ramirez. He's back.
And then we get into the whole clone sub-meta game of, like, yeah, actually, all these people aren't real people. They're just cloned from the same cells.
Whoa.
And everything gets done. But, I mean, I end up finishing that mission with only Dylan Ramirez as a casualty. But it was really, I was heartbroken. It was my first main, like, destruction. But it was so impactful. It's the same way when you play Dark Souls and something goes horribly, horribly wrong in Dark Souls.
There's no option out of that in Dark Souls. So.
But that's how I feel about XCOM. There should be no option out of that as well.
Maybe to prevent people like me.
Yeah.
You scummer. Yeah, it's like you've chosen to play this game as a masochist, but it can be played a different way.
What people don't know is that straight after I finished that mission with my one casualty, feeling very very terrible, I went and did a routine mission, and entire team wipe. Potter Newman, who was a sexy German female sniper,
just like me.
Yes, was the first to go, swiftly followed by AJ Duter.
Did he
Walker.
Call that an airstrike on his own position?
No, he
wasn't
didn't.
On purpose.
Yes, it was. Don't lie. You killed your team in Operation Flashpoint. You did it on purpose. Don't try and pretend you didn't.
I was trying to experiment with the airstrike function.
On your teammates in a helicopter.
Well,
fuck you.
I thought it would blow up the helicopter before you guys got there, or maybe like nearby.
For people who don't know this story, what happened was, and I wrote about this, was in it's called There Is No Potter in Team. Please go and read that. We'll put a link at the bottom of this to go and read this. But basically, Potter decided it'd be really funny to fuck up an entire game that we'd been playing for an hour and a half.
Yeah, it was really long, wasn't it? And we've done so well.
On your behest,
end.
As well. On your behest.
There.
We could have finished that mission in 20 minutes. And you're like, let's go and do this.
I remember what happened, though. I was like, wouldn't it be funny if I ruined this? It would be the funniest thing ever. After like an hour and a half of tracking around, like completing the mission, like we thought we weren't going to do it at various points. And we managed to get through as a team. Teamwork.
And then everyone died as a team.
Yeah, everyone died. Apart from me, I didn't die. But I thought.
You finished the mission, you got the achievement, you were like, okay, thanks for your help, guys. I really appreciate it.
I wasn't even that.
Your services are no longer required.
Yeah. You,
Because I assumed, as the host, I think, at the time...
You were the host.
Yeah, I assumed I'd stay alive and get my achievement. Well, not an achievement. I assumed I'd complete
your
mission. Everyone would be like, ha 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 ha, that was funny. But no, because you're going to have to explain the mechanics. I can't remember.
Basically, the mechanic is they try to discourage team kills. And the way they do that is by, if someone team kills, they get killed from the game. Well, they get removed from the game after a certain amount of team kills. And I knew Hurry, so I was like, right, if you kill three people, you get kicked from the game. So he called an airstrike on all three of our teammates and got kicked from the game. But because he was the host, we also got kicked from the game.
After an hour and a half of effort.
So we had to do the entire first level again because of him. And I did actually a couple of...
James was really angry for some of them.
That's cool, we can bleep that.
Okay. We can bleep it.
Really angry for some reason. And I never...
I actually, for about 10 minutes, I did. I was like, how much would it cost to pay for a flight back to England? And could I get back to work? And could I just show up at Hurry's house, ring the doorbell, wait for him to answer, punch him in the face, and then leave? Fortunately, I realised that financially that's not a good idea. It would have cost me like $500 just to get my relief.
Fortunate, I think, in that situation, you know.
You really don't want to play co-op with Bobby Kotick, though, because he will fuck you up.
Who's...
Bobby Kotick, head of Activision.
Yeah.
I don't know what that joke is, but go with it.
Well, I'm sorry.
No, it's. I think it's failed now. We're probably going to cut this. Bobby Kotick could afford to hop in his private jet and fly to England, punch him in the face, and then leave again. And you could get a free copy of Black Ops 2 as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, you
could shoot him in the face in that as well. But anyway, going completely off point.
Back to XCOM.
Yeah. The routine mission basically ended with Hurry Newman, or Potter Newman as she was called, the sexy German sniper.
Just like me.
Yeah. Got killed. AJ Duta got taken out next. Sean Green was eviscerated. And then basically...
I think you mean died heroically.
Yes. Actually, really embarrassingly, actually, was the way he died, but I won't go in.
Seriously?
A cyber disc showed up right behind him out of nowhere, and...
Did it basically rise up under his feet and he was still on top of it? He was like, oh my god, I don't know what's happening, and then he fell off and broke his neck?
No. What actually happened was it went into its animation where it sticks its tail out and it looked like it shoved its tail up your ass and then killed you with a laser beam.
Dude, what do you know about my sex life? Seriously. Can we remove that camera?
So then all I had was Walker, who's support, this other guy called Mr. Knowles, who was assault, and Lizanne OKK. Lizanne OKK, who, again, there was a weird meta narrative going on, is as in she came into my team, she looked exactly like someone I know who I hate. Anyway, but the thing is, so as soon as she came into the team, the first thing I did is I was like, oh, I have to rename her as Lizanne. So I stuck her in, and obviously like, there's the meta narrative of I kept putting her in as many dangerous positions as possible to get her killed, but she always came out on top and murdered everyone and was really good and kept jumping through the ranks. And slowly
good.
But surely...
She proved you wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
Stan, if you hear this, I love you.
Slowly but surely, she earned the respect of her commander and the rest of the team. So there's Lizanne OKK, Walker, essentially Mr. Knowles. And Lizanne got taken out really, really harshly. And for a second there, my heart dropped. I was like, damn, after all of this, earning the respect of her co-workers and commander, she gets taken out in this horrible manner, like fucking sniped. And then, so all that's left is Walker and Knowles, and they slowly but surely are breaking through areas of the game. Like, we took down a bunch of stuff, and I was like, I could actually just evacuate. I could get these two guys out, they're really high level, can, like, write this mission off, But I was like, no, I'm being greedy. And one of them had the ability to run, then shoot, like could dash and then shoot. And the other guy had a couple of really good support abilities. And Knowles runs through, dashes, spots this alien, shoots, misses. But I was like, no, it's okay. He's missed, but it's okay. Because he's only got two health left anyway, because we've been shooting at him. So I moved Walker round, and Walker had a 99% chance of hitting this guy. Fires, misses.
What?
At 99%. And then...
unluckiest guy ever.
Yeah. And then panics. Straight after missing the shot, panics. Jumps over the balcony that he was next to. Lands right in the middle of another cyber disc and a muton. The muton then shoots Walker... no, sorry, not Walker. Knowles, straight in the face, kills him with one shot. The cyberdisc and the muton then murder Walker in an absolute, and it was a complete team wipe, and there's nothing I could do. And I was just both like head in hands. I almost gave up on XCOM and
I
never played it again.
I just love the idea that a guy panics and his first instinct is to fling himself off a balcony.
The best tactic. Yeah. But I mean, that's very much the evocation versus invocation lore there, like. That evoked like what XCOM's about for me, like of that just, oh no. And then the thing is, it's not game over at that point. It's the game carries on, but you just lost every good teammate that you could possibly have, and it's like, okay, start again, do it again, and now you have crappy people.
It's funny that that you have gone to such lengths to name all of your characters, because when I started playing the game the same day that it came out, I named every single soldier after, you know, flatmates and workmates and my girlfriend as well. And I was playing on Classic because, you know, I was like, well, I'm a veteran of the original XCOM games. You know, I'm going to be boss at this. This is going to go so smoothly. So on my third mission... my girlfriend got shot in the face, and I had to tell her the next day, because I'd already told her that I'd made her a soldier in XCOM, and I had to tell her the next day when she asked how she was doing, I said, I'm really sorry, you got shot in the face and you were bleeding out. And Grace Jones, who is actually a close personal friend, Grace Jones was coming to help you, but she got shot by an alien on Overwatch and died instantly. And there was no one else who was able to help you, so I watched you bleed out. And after that, I thought,
how
I'm not going to...
take that?
Well, better than when I told her that in FTL, she got sucked out through a crack in the hull. But I don't name characters in XCOM after people I know anymore.
For good reason, I think.
Yeah, and also because you go through so many of them that... you run out of names after a while.
Yeah. Well, no, I've got plenty of characters. They die.
Plenty of
cannon
fodder.
I've still got the same squad, so...
because you're a scrub.
Yeah.
That's true. We've kind of talked about, like, our experiences. Is there anything really we should talk about XCOM?
Well, I mean, there's a number of sort of mechanical points that I thought might be interesting to talk about. We've kind of touched on the difficulty levels. I mean, like I say, my first playthrough was on Classic. You've been playing, is it Classic Iron Man or Normal Iron Man?
No, Normal Iron Man. I couldn't handle Classic. The Classic's too hard for me.
Yeah, the Classic is, I mean, yeah, because actually, to finish off that story about my Classic game, after my girlfriend bled out, I struggled through. See, I was really sad.
That was so wrong.
It was really awful.
Great.
I love you, Claire. That sounds so flippant, I'm sorry. Yeah, I struggled on for another, until the beginning of the fourth month of the game, and at that point, enough countries... their populations got really panicked, and when a country's population gets really panicked, they back out of the XCOM project. If that happens to eight countries in what they call the doom meter, I think, then you know that you lose the game on the strategic level. I mean, you can lose as many missions as you want, because losing missions is awesome, and you can always just hire new soldiers. But if you lose eight countries in the strategic metagame, then that's it, you're fucked, it's game over. It took me about 3 or 4 hours to get to that that point of complete and abject failure in the strategic metagame. And I started playing again on Normal, and that's the game that I actually won. But compared to that Classic playthrough, where in 3 months I lost approximately 30 soldiers, and when you go into each mission with a team of 4 to 6 guys, that's quite a fucking lot. In comparison, in the entire playthrough of my normal game, I lost two guys. I mean, admittedly, I'd learned the mechanics at that point, so I was going to lose less guys. But like I say, I did not save Scum at any point, and only losing two guys. I didn't lose a mission. I had to skip one mission at one point during the entire playthrough. But basically, my point is, the normal mode is possibly too easy, and the classic mode is too brutal. If it was just me, I'd say that that's, you know, maybe just that I'm a bit better than normal, but not good enough for classic. But a number of people have said this online. It's a complaint that I've come across a number of times.
I would agree with that to a certain extent. But I actually, what I do hate is that there are a bunch of really horrific game exploits in that, which allow you to take on classic in a way that you wouldn't expect to be able to.
Really now?
Well, no, for example, we already talked about line of squad sight with the sniper. With squad sight, if you have line of sight, you can and see everything. Now, there's an armor you can get much later on called the Archangel Armor, which is a flight. It allows you to fly, and it allows you vertical. Mm. So, most people, what they do is you put that Archangel Armor on your sniper who has squad sight, and then you push him as high up vertically as you can.
Yeah.
So he has line of sight on everything.
That's not really an exploit. Oh, okay, you're getting...
Then what you do is you have two assault guys. Now, the assault guys, what they can do is they have the ability which they can trigger what's called Overwatch. And they can trigger Overwatch, but if they trigger an Overwatch, they will not get killed by it. They actually have a thing called fast reflexes or something.
Lightning reflexes. Overwatch, by the way, is it's something that you can set your guys to, and the aliens can too. It basically means that you don't take a shot in your turn, but you wait until something enters your line of sight, and then you take a shot with reduced accuracy. Mm-hmm. So it's quite handy when you know that things are going to be approaching you.
Yeah. What you can then do is, then to the sniper you can add, there's two more abilities. One of the abilities is, it gives them a plus 10 aim and a plus 10, I can't remember what else. But
critical chance, maybe.
Critical chance, possibly, when they're on elevated, but they also get pluses to being elevated a certain amount.
Oh,
so if you push them to the top of the skybox, they get a ridiculous amount of pluses to everything. Plus this extra plus thing. And then you could just put them on Overwatch and then move people through the level so that they do lightning reflex to go through anything on Overwatch, and then your sniper just snipes them for 100% hit, 100% critical charge.
Surely that's okay, just utilising the game mechanics, because it's very similar to real life, how like someone's
when you have a flying sniper and a guy who can dodge all bullets
flying
like
in a jetpack, obviously. As
yeah,
they do in real life.
They're up in the air,
doesn't it?
Yeah, I have a flying car, personally.
Well, the thing is...
Then that sniper is always going to hit that person.
But I would say that, like, I kind of agree. It is an exploit, like, in the sense that they what you've done... And because I was arguing with someone about this, he's like, oh, it makes the game too easy.
Mm.
But on Classic, it makes the game bearable, I should say.
Well, it is total cheese. I mean, that, you know, that is, you know, it's operating,
it's,
you know, within the law.
Oversight, I think.
Well, yeah, and I'm sure that they'll
oversight
that at some point.
It's kind of an oversight, did you say?
A
bit like an Overwatch.
Yeah, a bit like a...
I was overwatching your oversight, and
I
don't have anywhere to go with that.
Yeah,
but, I mean, it is cheese. It's total power gaming. But, at the same time, to get to the point where you have a sniper who has the perks necessary for all of these various things, and you actually have the Archangel armor, and you have like assault guys with lightning reflexes. Well, actually, mostly when you're talking about the point of the game when you've got the Archangel armor, you're really fucking far through.
True.
So it's not like this is something that's available from the get-go.
No,
I mean,
true.
you have to get through the vast majority of the game before you get to that point. And once you've reached that point, you've already encountered 90% of what the aliens are going to throw at you.
90% of what the aliens are going to throw at you, but not what the game is going to throw at you. Case in point, I had one of my squaddies, he wasn't a squaddie by that point, he was probably a major, Bradley Knaws.
Bradley Knaws?
Yeah. That's actually his real name. He's a guy I work with, his name is Bradley Knaws. Well, Knaus, but we call him Knaws.
Yeah,
right. Anyway, Brad, you're awesome and everything. You're not going to listen to this podcast, but... Yeah. Anyway, Bradley Knaws. He runs up a ramp, comes face to face with a sector pod, which are these giant kind of Ed 209, 20 seconds to comply kind of robots.
Oh god, sectopods. Yeah. By the way, in the original UFO Enemy Unknown, sectopods were the most stupid looking things I've ever come across. They were just a big face on two legs with like a helmet on.
Yeah, no, I fear those things. When I see them, I fear them. But anyway, so Bradley Nors walks up, runs up, gets rocket launched in the face completely, goes down, but he gets critically hit rather than killed, which means that you can actually still go back and save him. But the thing is, because of the physics, because he's on a ramp, he slid down the ramp to the bottom and then dropped through the world.
Oh, shit.
No way. Really?
Dropped through the world. And they're like, Bradley Nors is bleeding out. And
you need to save him.
Yeah, you need to save him.
Well, if you get a support character who reaches the rank of major, then they unlock a spade.
It's dig out
the dude. Well, because you know normally they just dig graves, but.
By the way, do you love my segue on like we know about the challenge that's given by the aliens, but what about the game?
Yeah, the game made throw you. Yeah.
But anyway, he dropped through the world, and on the next turn he died instantly. In another game I was playing...
At least they wrote that into the game code. So
bear with me, I was about to renege on that point. Work with me on this one, I've got more stories.
Of course. You always do.
Thank you. I don't know if that was a good
thing. Yeah, I was going to say, I think that's a compliment.
In the next terror mission where we're supposed to be saving civilians, I managed to kill pretty much everyone, and I mind-controlled one of the mutons. Like, you have the ability to, like, psychically control enemies. And the thing is, after three turns, they go back to their old selves, and you cannot target them while they're mind-controlled. They're considered friendly. So, obviously, the first thing I did is, because he has a grenade, I dropped a grenade on his own feet to reduce him in health. And then I moved him out into an area, and I was like, right, this is the end of his third turn. And as soon as you un-mind-controlled him, he ran... instant shotted one of the civilians, which he can do apparently, and then dropped through the world. And I was like, okay, well, fuck it. He's the last guy. He's blatantly, because I've been through most of the level, I was like, he's the last guy, fuck him. But he didn't die. And he's able to one shot any civilian anywhere in the level from underneath the ground. So there was points of me running to try and save civilians who were on the third floor of this building, and he just goes bam and shoots him through the world.
It's alien technology, man.
Oh my god, it made me so angry. And then Don Gara, by the way, who is a legend in his arsehole guile hair, after he killed Matthew Kelly. Well, he didn't kill
Matthew Kelly, man.
Well, I'll talk about Matthew Kelly in a few seconds. But
I'm really curious. I'm like hyped up about Matthew Kelly.
I love Matthew Kelly too. But anyway, Dom Gara's running back, and for some reason he sits in a square where all of a sudden he can target this creature that's underneath the world, and you can headshot him, and I've finished the mission. But if I hadn't got to that one random square, like it's a random square on the entire level, that guy would just go around killing every civilian that he could, and he can just one shot them. He doesn't get a percentage shot. He always kills them. If he aims at civilian, he kills them. It was awful.
I actually had that happen with an alien drop through the world in the last mission, three times.
Wow.
I eventually fixed it. I'm doing air quotes right now, by knowing exactly which two floaters. Those are a particular type of alien, rather than something left in the toilet bowl.
Yeah.
Knowing exactly which two floaters did that, and charging a guy towards where I knew exactly where they would be with everyone else on Overwatch, so the very instant they started to move, they got shot by like five dudes. Yeah, it was really irritating, but I got through that. And I'm just glad that I wasn't playing Iron Man, because otherwise,
yeah,
back to the start of the mission. I mean, apparently, if you're playing Iron Man on that last mission, you can deliberately kill all of the members of your team, and it will give you the option to restart the mission, but that's only if you're able to kill your own guys, because you can't shoot at them. All you can do is gather them together and get everyone with explosives to fire rockets at the ground and toss grenades in the air and stuff. If you haven't gone the explosives route, then you're fucked, basically, and you get to start the game again. Isn't that fun? Yeah.
You fell through the world. Start the game again.
Well,
yeah.
I actually finished it on Iron Man. Yeah. I actually finished the on Iron Man.
Did you have any of these issues in, like, the last mission?
No, fortunately, I didn't. I did have one issue where what happened was I moved too far forward and hadn't explored one area of the level, and So I had three of my guys positioned around this area, which I couldn't go through, and I'd thrown grenades at it and all kinds of stuff. So I wasted a ton of ammunition. And then I realised, oh wait, there's one area, maybe I have to kill some guys.
Why
so
were you
I,
throwing grenades at
it was
an area that
was
on...
It was a door. It was a door, and maybe I was like, maybe you have to throw...
Was it closed?
Yes.
Yeah.
You were throwing grenades at it?
That I couldn't open.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's the exact same thing that happened with this floater that fell through the world. I mean, unless you kill all the aliens in an area, the doors won't open. It's not like elsewhere in the game when you can just manually open them.
Yeah.
You have to hit these trigger points.
Oh. But anyway, so
it's really annoying.
I backtracked with three of my men and left my other three guys going, all right, these guys are going to be right there, but I suspect something pretty horrible is going to happen. So
I'm just going to go and check out that noise. I'll be right
back. That's exactly what happened. At the time, it was Dom Gara, I can't remember who the other two guys are. Oh, it was Thor Phillips. Famous Swedish man.
You worked with Thor?
Yeah, he was pretty badass.
He worked with some pretty cool people.
His real name's not Thor. His real name's Tom Phillips. But
don't ruin the dream.
Okay, again. Anyway, he's Thor Phillips. Jesus Saroy.
Tom Phillips, Master of Lightning.
Jesus Saroy and Thor Phillips and... Oh, I can't even say that properly. And Dom Gara all go back towards this one area. Spawns some thin men who are pretty easy. We kill them. And then as that happens, two Muton characters spawn right next to my three guys who have all been on Overwatch. But guess what? Overwatch doesn't trigger. And so the Mutons get free fucking shots.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Well, whenever I've seen aliens drop into a mission,
they
get a move
does.
Only and not a shot.
Yeah, I've
and I've also had
shots.
Overwatch trigger when aliens are dropped into it. Overwatch will still trigger.
Yeah.
So that was fucked up.
Yeah,
saying that,
random.
I have had, even in the early parts of the game, I've had aliens suddenly... They weren't out of sight. They just are suddenly there.
Yeah,
amongst my squad.
But I don't mind...
They haven't moved.
Because a couple of times where I've had that happen where they drop down right next to the squad... Overwatch still works, and they still can shoot those guys as they drop.
Yeah, no, these aliens hadn't dropped over, well, maybe in your case they have, but, a couple of times, I'm not sure what exactly has gone on. Maybe they were out of sight, but it's before the aliens have started moving, it's the aliens' turn, and suddenly I've realised there's an alien right next to my guy who was, stood facing, a room in front of him. And when they're facing the room, you see the whole room.
It's your soldier was just having a shave, and he just pushes the shaving mirror shut, and the alien behind him.
Yeah. Oh my god! what he did is he went, Muton, 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 Muton. And then he closed again, and he went, oh Jesus Christ! Has no one seen Candyman? For fuck's sake.
I remember hearing that story when I was eight, but I've not seen Candyman.
Shame on you.
Really?
I guess.
Tony Todd's best movie.
I've also, for the record, not seen Requiem for a Dream, Citizen Kane, and the King of Fighters movie. I don't know.
King of Fighters movie.
Come
on, my god, dude,
like
what's wrong with you?
Never mind all the other classic.
I have
the King of Fighters movie.
I have seen Orson Welles' last film though. So good on you, Orson. Transformers the movie was sweet. Yeah. This is a career ender right there.
But anyway, so what were you saying about?
I'm just atlantically
just appears
I don't know whether it's a glitch or something that I've not quite worked out in the game mechanics, because it's happened a couple of times now. But I'll pay very close attention to each member of my squad and seeing where they're facing, make sure they're checking out the right areas, and I'll end the turn. I'll put them on Overwatch or whatever, and suddenly there's an alien just in front of one. I'm literally on the block next to my...
Hey guy, how's it going?
Yeah, that alien was not there.
Can I tell you about the Church of Latter-day Saints?
it's quite mystifying.
Yeah.
And then I reload because I'm a safe whatever.
Yeah. But actually that last mission actually turned out really well, because after I killed those guys who were thieving evil bastards. I walk through that one square, the door goes up, thing spawns. I'm not going to say what spawns, no real spoilers, but really what happened was, before anything could move or do anything, the thing that spawned died.
Really?
Yeah.
Yay! I would totally taken that to mean game complete.
It was game complete.
Yeah, literally.
But the way in which the game complete was hilarious.
That sounds slightly close to my experience. And I'm also not going to try and avoid spoilers, but what I will say was sniper, long corridor.
Yes.
Soldiers fanning out, squad psych, double tap.
Yes. Actually, I had two snipers. And I had two snipers with double tap, and pretty much it was over. And it was
I didn't even need two, just one guy.
You know, like,
oh, it's the ultimate enemy. Okay,
it's over. Oh dear. The sniper double tap just was ridiculous.
Yeah, it's absurd.
Well, because the first sniper missed one of the shots, so the second sniper just finished it off.
The second sniper is just like fucking rookies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
are they going to patch this out?
No, I hope not. I hope not, because people were like, dude, I don't know how you can beat the first level in one turn. And I was on Iron Man, so the whole time I'm shitting myself, and then snipers. I think we talked about XCOM a shit ton, and I think pretty much the verdict is, please go play it. It's really good.
Yeah, and actually, I just want to add on to all of that that I haven't experienced that many bugs at all in the game.
In fairness, nor have I. I've had a couple, and they've stuck out. But for the most part, very few.
For me, it feels like playing the original, like European title, UFO, Enemy Unknown, and whatever the US title was.
Yeah.
The first one.
XCOM.
Thank you, sure.
Pooey. Fartface, I don't know. Super mature.
That's the official name.
Pretty Fartface.
But to me, it really brings back memories of playing that, and it's exciting and scary, and it's also nice on the brain because you get to it's turn based. It's not RTS.
No, I utterly agree with you in the sense that
RTS
it brings back. Yeah, it brings back a lost genre, and it does it a lot of justice.
Mm-hmm.
In ways.
And very faithfully as well,
yeah,
I think.
Agreed.
And we haven't really talked at all about the graphical style or anything. I really dig the graphical style. It's
Yeah. Well, carry on.
I just really dig, it's almost PS2 sort of style graphics in a way, or original Xbox graphics. But they've done a really charming sort of job with it. They're very self-aware that they don't need to use, really detailed models for the, and the story as well, the plot, the overall plot is very very basic. It leaves it it very much leaves it up to your imagination. It's almost like reading a book in many ways. It's nice.
It's obviously not a game that's had multi-millions thrown at it, but all of the money that they have had, they focused on all of the right areas. They focused it on developing, it sounds so lazy to say it, but they've put the money into developing the gameplay and filing it down to a razor sharp point. I mean, it's incredibly focused in a way that the original XCOM games never were. I mean, they were big and expansive and weird, and all sorts of shit could happen, and it would often be very confusing and difficult and confusing. I already said that, but the new XCOM game is very focused. Focus is something that's new to the series, and I think it's a really welcome addition.
I agree.
What I was trying to say is I absolutely completely agree with you, Hari, in that sense of, in the best movies, it's about focusing on understanding what the people didn't say rather than what they did say in terms of expanding a narrative. And when you were talking about the idea of an imagination, I think that also ties in a lot with the way I feel about games, is that games, a lot of time, when they're at their best, they're toys.
Yeah.
As in, they have a bunch of verbs and a bunch of things that you can do within those games, and you can kind of play around with them and have a lot of fun. But all the stories that happen, everything I just told you about KK or AJ Duta, all of that, none of that is actually
narrative.
It's my narrative. I got a bunch of toys and I got to play around with them in certain scenarios, and I created that the whole meta idea of what was going on in it. And I think that's what XCOM nails, is it knows when to skimp on things and when to focus on things. And I think when it realised that it's not going to be a great narrative, in terms of it's not going to be a Bioshock and it's not going to be Uncharted or something like that, but what it is going to be able to do is going to give you a bunch of toys which allow you to impose your own imagination on those things. And I think you're absolutely right in that sense of the fact that you do get invested in these characters, and seeing them evolve and then die in some cases is really effective.
And being able to tell the story of the overall thing.
Yeah.
That's the event that's happened.
Yeah.
Well, the whole event. You're able to put it into a narrative.
Yeah.
You're able
Yeah, case in point, we're watching Omen Mustafa fire a rocket launcher backwards into...
It's entertaining.
It's what I believe games are about. Giving you tools to tell your own stories.
Yeah, games should not be movies or books even. Mm.
Agreed.
I completely agree, and following on from that point, what I wanted to sort of add, following on from what you guys have just said, is that it's very true, that is what the modern XCOM is. It's not as freeform in that way, in terms of developing these stories, as the original games were, and, you know, that, I mean, that's certainly not a point that I think, you know, any of us are trying to make, but what it does is it retains the essential nature of that, whilst bringing so much more to the table, that it is a much more focused and cohesively and coherently designed game. And I think it's fantastic that that sort of game can be made now and can be released and can be a big name title that is bought and played by a huge number of people, and it's really fucking exciting to see that.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah,
absolutely agreed.
Yeah, completely agree.
Anyway, we should go for a break.
Arcadian Rhythms.
Oh my god, PlayStation Network is the worst. Oh, hang on. So wait, is this installing now?
No, it said it's installed.
I can't let you do that.
I'm sorry, are you trying to play games on your games console? Actually, I can now understand why PlayStation 3 was being argued as not actually a games console for tax evasion purposes, but actually a system. Because, like, look, we've made all these really weird ways of installing everything and fucking everything up. It's just like a PC, so we shouldn't be taxed for it.
No, fuck off. This is not like a PC. This is fucking bullshit.
Okay, it's PC circa 1995. With its IRQ changing and all that other rubbish.
Jesus Christ, yeah.
Can you buy, like, all new games?
Right, okay.
I guess so. Look, $49.99.
Yeah,
50 quid for a game.
I almost paid $44.99.
Wait a minute, that was $59.99, the other one.
I almost paid $44.99 for Where the Samurai Fall before realising it was actually on Blu-ray as well.
Oh, shit.
That's like,
these aren't advertised. Oh, for fuck's sake.
Save the day.
Oh my god.
They
got Under Defeat, though. I really want to play Under Defeat. It's a Dreamcast game that's good. Which is all of them.
Dreamcast game?
That sounds good.
Sleepy dogs.
Arcadian Rhythms. It's so good, though. It's really good. It's really, really good.
I'm sad that we've not been able to play Tokyo Jungle.
Tokyo Jungle's... Look, it has systems upon systems. The way in which it works, like the herbivores, the way in which they move around, and they eat plants, and if they eat too many plants, the herbivores move to another area. And basically, you can actually make entire sections of this kind of GTA world deserts by doing these things. And while all these systems, overlaying systems of pollution moving through and killing things, you could have a Pomeranian in tiny wellies with an antenna hat and a little coat murdering hyenas. How great is that game?
It is the best.
Theoretically, it sounds fucking sweet.
You could play through the whole survival mode without unlocking everything, but you could play through being a vegetarian, which makes me happy.
Yeah.
In some weird way.
So good! So good! Anyway, we slagged off PSN, and we love Tokyo Jungle, and everyone should play Tokyo Jungle despite the fucking anachronistic fucking interface. What else are we going to talk about?
I suppose the main other game that we wanted to talk about was Way of the Samurai 4, which I think you have played rather more of than anyone else. Well, in fact, I've not played any. We've seen you play a small amount of it.
Shout out to
Melinda Mega Melons.
Melinda Mega Melons. Yeah!
Yeah, so, I mean, I think that has demonstrated in one fell swoop that the Japanese are still really, really great at writing
as well as the
serious
freaky,
and sympathetic
freaky,
female characters.
The freaky 9-year-old who could speak fluent Japanese.
The fluent English.
Yeah, she's English, sorry. English. Yeah, not a Japanese child.
Yeah, I constructed my sentence poorly, but yes.
The English child whose parents are trying to, or whose father or mother is trying to trade tobacco in Japan during the intro sequence of Where the Samurai Fall.
Right.
Who speaks fluent Japanese. Why? How? How is this possible?
Well, she was just trying to show up that drunk guy.
In that period as well. It's not even like modern times where a child could plausibly learn.
Where the Samurai, pretty much the main inspiration for it is Akira Kurosawa. Akira Kurosawa directed two movies called Rashomon and Yojimbo. In Rashomon, the film is pretty much a bandit accosts a samurai who is escorting a lady and kills him. And in Rashomon, you kind of get to learn from four or five different people the different varying stories of exactly the same thing. So you get to learn the perspectives of these other four people pretty much telling exactly the same story, but their truths and the ideas of their truths. In Yojimbo, it's about a lone samurai walking into a village, and there are two warring factions, and the samurai plays the two warring factions off each other, and kind of culminates with sort of victoriously saving the villagers. Now, the whole thing about Where the Samurai is, it plays very much on those two perspectives, in the sense that you play a lone samurai who walks into an area where there are at least two to three warring factions, and it's your choices that significantly change how the storyline plays out. But one of the things that I really like about this is that there are usually between 18 and 21 endings to the game. And you can finish the game in about 7 hours, but subsequent playthroughs can actually take 30 minutes to finish. What you will encounter is that your perception of what the truth is very much changes as you play. The more you play, like this kind of emergent narrative, which is something that me and Sean have talked about, is you learn a bit about a character, and you're like, okay, so this guy is the vulture. He's a twat. He completely sucks up to this one person. He feeds on the dead, in that sense. But then you play it again, completely different playthrough, and you learn that although, yes, he is actually a despicable character, the motivations for why he does these things, in this case, I'll say, he wants to be appreciated, and he's never really found his strength in what he's doing. So he's still a terrible person, but you start to empathise with him. And the more these stories layer onto these, the truths that you believe in the first playthrough. I'll give a point of Way of the Samurai 3. The truths that you first encounter, where you see this very honourable guy, this very very fiery guy, they're fighting from two different factions. But what you realise is the very honourable guy is actually doesn't have that much honour. He's kind of sold himself out to kind of keep the bloodline of the dynasty that he believes in. Whereas the fiery guy is kind of, through his own actions, probably going to destroy everything and not really believe true to what he's saying. But you won't know that until you've done five or six playthroughs where you start to realise what's going on. In the same way with Rashomon, you don't really get to understand all of the subtlety, all the truths of an actual event until you've played a shit ton of it. Where the Samurai 4 continues that, and it does it very much in that style of, it doesn't explain a lot to you, but as you build into it, it makes you part of this world of these characters. And so I'm not going to say it's going to do it as subtly as it did in Where the Samurai 3, seeing as I've already seen a torture scene on a weird spiked triangle, but that was weird. What the fuck was
that
about?
Was pretty fucked up.
Best mini game ever, as Sean put
it. I think I actually used the phrase the most inexplicable mini game ever.
Sorry, I heard it as the best mini game ever.
Well, I suppose depending on your perspective, it might be.
Yeah, probably my own perspective.
The thing about Where the Samurai 4, every single other one was a very parochial little village where things developed. And I mean, one of the fascinating things is you can actually play the entire game without killing a single person if you want to. Mm. You can actually make choices like that. But in Where the Samurai 4, it's moved into a larger town, which shouldn't make a big difference, but actually it feels like it's culturally evolving. Because the town in which you're based in is a port town, which is has connections with the Western world. And so it's about the idea of Japan dealing with outside influence. And sure, there's a character called Melinda Mega Melons, who's a character, but it's already starting to deal with the idea of racism in Japan.
Mm.
You know, the anti-foreigners versus the pro-foreigners, as they put it. And it's just fascinating, and I think it was timely because I've just started reading David Mitchell's book, A Thousand Autumns of Jacob DeZoet, which is about one of the first towns in Japan that started allowing outside influence. And so it's kind of really interesting from that perspective of these people who are supposed to be pure of heart, who are essentially massive racists. They don't want the English influence inside their own towns and stuff. So from that side, like, a lot of the storylines, and I haven't had a chance to play it through, but a lot of the storylines, what's going on, is fascinating. Mm. To have a Japanese developer explore the idea of Japanese racism is really cool.
Mm.
And the combat's the same as Way of the Samurai 3. It's very clunky in places.
Mm.
It's kind of awkward. You can
but
do
awesome.
Yeah, very much awesome.
Like Bushido Blade.
Yeah, very much so. Like the one-shot kills at the moment are great. It's one of those games you need to play because of all of the stuff that's happening in it.
Mm.
And it's great.
In a way, it is the opposite of what I was complaining about, but in a good way. So it's not the type of story-driven game that's a bad thing. I won't name any because I'll probably become
Assassin's
unpopular.
Creed 3.
I won't name any apart from Assassin's Creed 3, which hasn't... Oh, it has come out now, hasn't it? But
yeah.
I haven't played
yeah,
it.
Yeah, let's not slag that off then, yeah. But yeah.
Or the entire Assassin's Creed series. I won't name any games apart from those. That entire series.
You
in
still
terms
not
of,
named any games, so...
Yeah, that's true.
That was
yeah,
too
that is true. in terms of bad storytelling. But this is... If Where the Samurai 3 is anything to go on, then Where the Samurai 4 is... perfect example of really a good led storytelling in a game.
Player led sort of storytelling.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, it's not something you have to create your own narrative from. It's the opposite of that. That's what I meant.
Okay. Well, yeah. It's all constructed.
It's something
but
that
you choose
giving
your own
narrative, but you choose your own path.
Yeah.
Mm.
I guess. It's
but you
like
feel empowered as well.
Even better, choose your own adventure
novel.
Yeah. Much better.
But you definitely feel empowered. It's not like the same where. I think I was criticising on like episode 3 with Sleeping Dogs, where there's these moments where this guy's having this moral dilemma. He's like, oh no, maybe I'm going to shoot this guy. Oh, I don't want to shoot this guy. And then literally like 2 seconds later, you're shooting people in the face and being like, whatever. When Way of the Samurai makes those moral like points of like, are you actually going to kill these people? Are you going to kill them or knock them out?
Mm.
That's a real... There are consequences to that. I mean, this is also a game where you can walk up to a guy and say, hey, I want to save my game. And if you want, you can kill your save points. So if you kill every dude who can save the game, you can't save the game anymore, because they're all dead.
Which is the most awesome thing ever. I mean, Dark Souls did it to an extent. Well,
yeah.
I guess, no, you could still save your game, because
yeah,
there's the campfires
in
Dark Souls. But,
whereas in Way of the Samurai, it's like, no, you've made this choice.
Yeah,
you
can no longer save the game. You're screwed.
I would say, though, that one of the things I would say is that there's a certain amount of fatigue that is involved in Way of the Samurai 4, because I've now played Way of the Samurai 2, Way of the Samurai 3 and 4, and they're all awesome and really good fun.
But,
have you guys played Risen?
No, I've not actually.
Okay, have you played Gothica? Or Gothic?
Oh,
Gothic, sorry, not Gothica. Gothica's
yeah,
a terrible
I've not, not played Risen, but yeah, that's basically Gothic 4, isn't it? Because
yeah.
There's Gothic 1, 2, 3, and then they lost the rights and they made Risen.
Okay, well, the thing about Risen is it's absolutely brilliant. Like, it is a fucking great game. It's broken in loads of places, but it has that same kind of Way of the Samurai. You start off with no knowledge of what the world's about, and your choices do have significant impact on what's going on. But there's only so many of that you can play where you're kind of fucked from the outset, and you're like, ugh. And then you kind of build up and build up and build up. Because I started playing Risen 2 after I played Risen 1, and I loved Risen 1. And Risen 2, I just don't have the effort or the inclination to carry on playing. I think Way of the Samurai, the series, is way more accessible than Risen. But I think if Way of the Samurai 5 doesn't introduce some more interesting stuff, it's going to suffer from the same thing that Risen has, where you're like, okay, look, I don't want to be in the same place again. Mm. I think actually Dark Souls and Demon Souls are going to have the same thing. If they make Dark Souls 2 and they don't add a bunch of other crazy shit and weird stuff, you'll just be like, look, okay, so I have no power, and I'm getting murdered over and over again. People are going to turn away from it. They're going to want something
else. The mechanic's not evolving. Well, I mean, it's probably evolving.
Well,
the
mechanic's the same, but
the feeling of the gameplay that you're going through, the end experience just feels too similar.
Yeah, exactly.
And I mean, and that's, you know, that's something that I talked about a bit actually with the Elder Scrolls games in, what did I call that article about Skyrim? Whatever the fuck that thing was I wrote about Skyrim, and it's just getting burned out on essentially doing the same thing.
Mm.
You know, it's higher fidelity and there's some variations there, but you're essentially doing the same thing.
Yeah, no, agreed. all the same, if this is the first opportunity you're having for Where the Samurai, go for it. It's so good. And if you don't, go and find Ray of Where the Samurai 3 on 360, because frankly, they haven't improved it graphically. It's still a great game. Very, very, very simple.
Mm.
So good.
Actually, you mentioned the graphics, and one of the things that, initially when you booted it up earlier and we were watching the game and we were making fun of the fact that, you know, the graphical fidelity is not great, the textures are kind of shitty.
The characters are repeated.
Character models repeat often
that
literally a crowd of 20 guys around you, it's basically just 5 guys repeated. You know, it's not great in that sense, but you know, we were making fun of that, and you know, and we did make the point that this is not a game about visuals. This is a game about, you know, what's going on mechanically there. That's what's interesting. Mm. But what did occur to me is that something like Way of the Samurai, even as a long-running series or as an individual game, what's interesting about it in a context beyond the game itself is that the Japanese games industry seems to have a much more healthy mid-list than you get in the West, and by mid-list, which is a book publishing term originally, I think, is that you're not talking, you know, the blockbuster sort of titles, the mega successful ones, and you're not talking the incredibly niche, very small run things. You're talking about the things that don't make a huge amount of money, but they make a very small amount, and it's self-sustaining. And in the modern age, in the last couple of decades, you've seen the mid-list sort of disappear in publishing, which is why everyone is chasing the next celebrity book or the next Harry Potter. You know, reliable authors who sell 10,000 books out of a print run of 11,000 or something like that. I mean, you don't tend to see much of that anymore because it's just not worth it in terms of the profit margins. And you see the same thing in gaming. You've seen so many developers disappear because they are essentially mid-list developers who make games that are, you know, not incredibly widely published, and you know, they're critically well received and they have their fans, but they don't sell 1 million, 2 million copies. They sell 300,000 copies, which to those of us on the fringes of the business seems like a good number to sell, but in terms of the companies that the larger corporations that, you know, that are the real financial players in this, it's too insignificant to be worth their time.
Yeah.
So you see the mid-list developers disappearing, and that's been all over Europe and America over the last decade, particularly after 2007 with the recession. But what games like Way of the Samurai 4 indicate to me is the fact that Japan does still seem to have room for this sort of game and this sort of business opportunity. And it may sound crass to talk about business in the context of, you know, a game or any other sort of cultural artifact, to put my wank hat on for a minute. but I mean, I think it's really cool that sort of thing is still appearing, and in the West you don't really sort of see something that's as unusual and experimental as the Way of the Samurai series outside of indie development.
That's
so great. I think that it's a point that's worth making.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, the Japanese games industry gets just a bit.
And fair enough. I mean, Melinda Mega Melons. I mean, seriously.
for repeating genres, but are offshoots of those repeating genres.
Mm.
Maybe they're more guilty of like mainstream games rehashing genres. But there are more extreme examples, more experimental examples of like games that are taking a different direction.
Yeah, indeed.
Such as Way of the Samurai series.
Totally.
Well, 3 and 4 at least, from what I know.
I suppose.
And Tokyo Jungle as well, actually.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's a very good point.
Agreed.
Arcadian Rhythms.
No one is here right now, except for me. I'm all alone. The last survivor of the Nostromo. Harry is taking a piss. So is Sean. This could be the last time Arcadian Rhythms makes a recording.